If I leave here tomorrow, would you still remember me? For I must be traveling on now, 'cause there's too many places I've yet to see. For if I stay here with you now, things just couldn't be the same. 'Cause I'm as free as a bird now, and this bird you cannot change. Oh, and this bird you cannot change. Lord knows I can change. Lord knows I can change.
This is J.D. Doyle and Queer Music Heritage. And that song, of course, was a bit of Free Bird, done by an artist you've heard a zillion times, but you may not know his name. He's Arnold McCullough, and while he's a successful solo artist, he's also quite known as a very in-demand session singer, who's been on thousands of recordings over the course of 35 years. He's provided exquisite backing vocals for a who's who of the music industry. I'll quickly rattle off just a few names: James Taylor, Carole King, Aretha Franklin, Diana Ross, Luther Vandross, Bonnie Raitt, Linda Ronstadt, Bette Midler, Lionel Richie, Dave Koz, Aaron Neville, Lyle Lovett, Phil Collins, Stevie Wonder, and on and on. As I've always been one to devour album liner notes, I'm very accustomed to seeing his name on album after album in my collection over the years. So it was a treat for me to interview him. I'll start by asking about the beginning of his career and finish up with his brand new CD called Soon As I Get Paid. I reached him by phone at his home in Los Angeles.
I want to do kind of a career approach.
Okay.
I can't cover everything, of course. It's just like scaling a mountain.
Yeah.
But I want to skip through the years and kind of start off with, do you have any idea how many albums you appear on?
I have no idea. I wish I could find out. You know, I would say probably in the thousands.
Wow. I know if you do a search on your name, for example, on eBay, in the music section, and you search, well, of course you get your own releases, but you also get pages and pages of James Taylor, Bonnie Raitt, Bette Midler, you know, all the classics.
And, you know, when I looked at your site, I realize I've sung for Michael Callan on his last recording before he died. And on that recording, I sang with Holly Near and Chris Williamson. So that was a great, cool thing.
Yeah, that's one of my questions. I'll get to that in a little bit. What was the first recording that you sang backup on? Do you remember?
The very first recording was Melissa Manchester in New York City, a record called Oh Heaven, How You Changed Me. Oh Heaven, I think it's just called. That was the first, you know, like, professional release.
And the one thing you taught me clearly to see is that the
what was the first you sang lead on?
The first I sang lead on? I don't remember. it was probably like one of the jazz records that I did early on, like a Jimmy McGriff record, or the first lead would have been my male vocal group, Revelation, would have been my first lead vocal.
That's my next question, to tell me about the group Revelation.
We were four gay men, black men. It was just a, basically a four-man vocal group. And we were signed to RSO Records, Robert Stigwood Organization. And that was a group out of New York that was from Revelation Movement, which were all comprised from the New York Community Choir, which was a choir from Harlem. Benny Diggs was the choir leader, and he was ended up being one of the members of Revelation. And he took four of us and made Revelation. And we got signed to Atlantic and got management, got the Bee Gees tour. We opened for the Bee Gees. And, we were really tight with LaBelle. So it was around the time LaBelle was performing around New York, so...
That was when they were really doing outrageous costumes.
Exactly, and we were trying to do funny costumes too, but we looked really silly.
From the first album by the group Revelation from 1975 is a bit of the song, Get Ready for This.
Have you been out of the closet, and did it affect your career?
I don't believe it has affected my career. If it has, it hasn't been negative. I've sort of been out pretty much all my life. I don't remember making a declaration, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I've always just lived authentically, if you know what I mean. I've just been myself. And everyone I've ever worked with has known that I was gay, and no one's ever made a deal of it.
Tell us about the trio Good Vibrations.
How did you know about that?
I research.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Well, Luther and David Lasley and I, well, David Lasley is my dearest and oldest friend in the music industry and sort of probably... Yeah, in the music industry, really. He and I have sung together since the Hair days. I did the Broadway musical Hair, and David sort of is the reason I ended up singing on records, because he was sort of the catalyst for us getting all these jobs with James Taylor and everybody. And he and Luther were doing sessions, and sometimes Luther and David and I would do commercial sessions and stuff in New York or disco recordings. And you know, in the disco era, we were doing 2 and 3 and 4 sessions a day, just moving from studio to studio, singing on, you know, Native New Yorker and, all the Savannah Band stuff and all those old, cool, and, you know, David and Luther on the Chic stuff. And Good Vibrations was just the next sort of, the next wave of that stuff. But they, you know, people loved the three of us together. And Chuck Kay, who was in charge of Warner Publishing, I guess, decided he wanted to do this album. And he put David and Luther and I, as a group, singing Beach Boy hits, you know, to disco beat. It's the funniest thing. I mean, we laughed most of the time.
Again, the trio Good Vibrations was composed of Arnold McCuller, David Lasley, and Luther Vandross. And there were 5 songs on their Good Vibrations album, and I did a quick mix of 3 of them.
God, oh.
They were really arranged, I think, for the dance floor rather than for radio.
Right. They were definitely for the dance floor. But I don't know if anyone ever heard them.
Yeah, really?
I don't even know if anyone ever danced to them. I mean, I just, to think that someone actually heard that stuff would be so funny. But it's a great record. I still have the vinyl, you know.
Who's on the cover?
I have no idea who she is. Just a model.
Okay. It's a shame that they didn't put the three of you on the cover.
Oh my God, that would have been so cool. But Luther is in his big period. Luther is in his large phase.
Did you know him well?
Oh yeah, he was a sweet, sweet guy. We were really good friends, and I was always worried about him, you know, with the yo-yo dieting. He would get really thin and be really, and then go from really being really thin to being really large, and I just knew it wasn't good for him, and I was always worried about him, but he was always kind to me, you know. I sang on at least one of his solo records.
Did you ever have conversations with him about if he would come out of the closet?
Never. I never did. I just let him be who he was. I knew that he didn't want to be publicly out, but he was out with all of his close friends. I mean, you know, Dion and Aretha, and I'm sure all those people knew he was gay, but it wasn't like, oh, this is my gay friend Luther. It was just like, this is my friend Luther, you know, this is a friend who just happens to be gay. But, you know, he had very secretive relations with folk. And he never really talked about, he never talked much to me about the guys he was with or who he was interested in. We would tease about who was cute or hot or, you know, and joke around about with that stuff a little bit, but that would be about it.
I remember seeing him on a TV show, this is later in the career, where it was like a tour of his home. And I forget who the host was, but he was going from room to room, and he told her, and you should see my closet.
Oh, what a great line. Did he show all the Lalique crystal?
I don't recall. I just recall that one line.
That one line? Well, the thing I recall from being in, he had Rona Barrett's home. He bought Rona Barrett's home in Benedict Canyon. It was the best house. And I went over there like two or three times. And one of the main features of the house was his collection of Lalique crystal. You know, really, really opulent and but right there in front of you. I mean, here's what I've done with my money. I've, you know, invested in Lalique.
I think one of your early duets was in 79 when Melissa Manchester asked you to sing on Whenever I Call You Friend.
Yes, that's right. So when I toured with Melissa, Melissa was like probably one of my first, you know, consistent tours. The reason I toured with her was to make sure that I was able to do that duet, because that was sort of like the little showstopper for us, you know?
Yeah, indeed.
Whenever I call you friend, I begin to think I understand. Anywhere I know, you and I have always been. Forever and ever,
I see myself within your eyes, and that's all I need to show me why. Everything I do always brings me home to you. Forever and ever.
Now I know my life has given me more than memories.
Day by day, we can see.
Every moment there's a reason to carry on. Sweet love showing us a heavenly light. I've never seen such a beautiful sight. See love glowing on us every night. I know forever we'll keep doing it. Sweet love showing us a heavenly light. I've never seen such a beautiful sight.
That song was written by Melissa Manchester and Kenny Loggins. But of course, he and Stevie Nicks had the hit with it. That same year, 1979, Arnold also sang on the soundtrack for the movie The Warriors.
Yep, I did Martha Reeves' Nowhere to Run. Kenny Vance was in Jay and the Americans. Do you know who that group is?
Oh yeah, I'm old enough.
Okay, well, Kenny was in Jay and the Americans, and Kenny hired me to put together four singers for American Hot Wax, the movie that I was in. So Kenny was responsible for me getting an American Hot Wax, and also I think on some level responsible for me being used as the vocalist for the Warriors. And I think Kenny produced that version of Nowhere to Run.
Something I'm curious about, when you're in the studio doing backups, you know, for recording, about what percent of the time is the lead singer there at the same time, as opposed to recording the backups later?
Sometimes always, sometimes never. It's totally, I'd say it's a 50-50, well, it's a 75-50. 75% of the time the lead singer's there, but 25% of the time they're not.
So you could be on somebody's album and never met them.
And never meet them, yeah. I did all of, say, there was a Diana Ross record, for instance. I did all of her reference vocals because she liked men to sing the reference vocals. She didn't like singing the way the women sang. She liked having men who sang high sing the reference vocals for her. So I did her entire, you know, all the lead vocals for her and then all the backgrounds, but never saw her. But on Saturday, I just did a record for Jason Mraz.
Sure.
I'm Yours is his hit single.
Yeah, I love that song.
Yeah, I do too. But he was so soft and so gentle, if you know what I mean, that it gave me pause. But he just seemed like a really nice, gentle guy. You know, not sure what story is there, but or anything. But anyway, I did a session with him, and he was in the studio, and I was surprised. I was actually surprised that he was there, because I expected it just to be the producer and the two singers, you know. But he was actually there and sang with us and knew exactly what he wanted, and we were in and out in an hour and did two songs.
I want to hear kind of the story of how you got involved with session singing.
Well, I started with the Broadway musical Hair, like I said, and from Hair, I toured with Hair for 2 years, and you know, David Lasley and I were singing What a Piece of Work Is Man in the musical, and you know, we were singing a lot together. He was writing songs, and I would sing with him as he sat at the piano and played, and I would sing along with him, and we both landed in New York around the same time. I think I got there first, and when I got there, I just started going around to you know, auditions, music theater auditions, you know, reading backstage and going to music theater auditions and basically pounding the pavement and living on unemployment and living on the money I'd saved from touring for, you know, all that time. When I landed in New York and started, you know, trying to get theater gigs and musical theater gigs, I realized that there was not a lot of money in that stuff, and that David and I put together a group, David, myself, and Lynn Pitney, just one of the other singers in Hair, and we had a really unique sound. So people liked our sound, and we sort of undercut the session singers and would work for a little less than scale, you know. So we got a lot of work. And one of our first gigs was doing reference vocals for Tony Orlando and Dawn. We would do all the backgrounds for Dawn and then do the reference lead for Tony.
What's a reference vocal?
We would sing a song that he was supposed to learn for the TV show. I think at the end of every Tony Orlando and Dawn show, there was a song.
So that they weren't, this wasn't their recording, this was to help the vocalist learn it.
Exactly. So what you heard was Tony Orlando and Dawn singing these tunes, but the way they learned how to sing the tunes was through David Lasley, myself, and Lynn Pitney.
Gotcha. Let's get to your first solo album. That was A Part of Me That's You from 84. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that?
It was done with David Benoit, a beautiful jazz keyboard player, who had two solo records that I had sung on. He had just one vocal tune on each of these records. The first one was Digits, and the second one, I forget the title, but I had sung two songs for him. And he was signed to AVI Records at the time.
I think the song was Take a Look Inside My Heart.
Take a Look Inside My Heart, yeah. And Part of Me That You was the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on Digits, yeah. Take a Look Inside My Heart was his very first record, yeah. So I had a vocal tune on each of those records, and his record label said, you know, we've got two tracks on you already. Let's see if we can put together, you know, eight more and put out an album on you. So that's how my first solo record came about, and I wrote quite a bit of it with Lorraine Feather and David. Lorraine's the daughter of Leonard Feather, the jazz writer for the LA Times.
From 1982, here's a bit of the song Take a Look Inside My Heart, listed on the 45 as by David Benoit featuring Arnold McCuller.
It isn't easy to show you what you mean to me. I'm not the kind with all the moves. The way I'm feeling goes beyond what you can see. I'm crazy about you, crazy about you. I haven't tried to impress you by the things I do. That isn't really how I am. I'd
rather let my dreams be opened up to you, so you'll understand, you'll understand. Take a look inside my heart and you'll see I have so much love to give. Believe in me. Take a look inside my heart, share my love. Take a look in my heart, yeah.
The next album, Exception to the Rule, was in 1990, and it spawned a choice duet with Bonnie Raitt.
Yes. I've been singing on Bonnie's records. I think I'd just done the Nick of Time album with her. And she was very generous to come in and sort of help me out on that. She just sort of learned the harmony part and sang it and, you know, split. But she was really great. That record came about because I had been signed to Virgin Records. They gave me $250,000. I did all the artwork. The record was ready to go to print. And the head of Black Radio said that the record wasn't black enough and she couldn't promote it. And they dropped me. And it's kind of devastating. So I just sort of picked myself up and said, fine, I'll start being an independent artist and make whatever kind of record I want.
No one's wrong, no one's right. Both of us think we're sorry tonight. Wanna fight about. Chose all sides, held our ground. Communication is all broken down. Can't lie about it. Oh, darling, I miss you so. Only time where your heart will go. I'm sitting here soul searching, playing with a broken arrow. Is it worth it? Feeling so blue. Sitting here soul searching. Got my focus straight and narrow. Private tunnel, wonderful view.
Hi, this is Arnold McCullough, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
Around 1995, you were involved in a couple of gay recording projects. On the compilation Winter Moon, you sang the John Bacchino song, A Mama Like Mine.
Yes.
How did you get involved with that?
I think he was a friend of David's, and he had heard my voice and knew that he wanted me on his record. I loved that vocal, actually.
A little lamb of God was born 2,000 years ago. But some things haven't changed so much. The wind, the snow, the glow within. Mother's touch. Jesus had a mama like mine to keep him from the cold, with a humble bed of straw and a heart of gold, holding him. Jesus had a mama like mine to treat him like a king. But even with no heavenly sign, every mama's child is divine to her.
There was an album released in 1996 that was a tribute to Michael Callen called Legacy. And his vocals were recorded, you know, shortly before his death in 93. You were on backups for six of the songs, including one of my favorites, Love Worth Fighting For.
Yeah. Michael was the coolest guy to work with. I remember flying to San Francisco to record with him. We did a lot of recording here in L.A., but, you know, once he and David and I got together, we realized we loved singing together. And we did most of that. David and Michael and I did a lot of stuff together in Los Angeles, but then I got to go to San Francisco and work with Holly and Chris.
Did you record anything else with Michael that's not on the Legacy album?
No, I didn't. Michael, you know, basically his manager and I were good friends, and I think we were just working on Michael's stuff, and he wasn't really well, but right. I distinctly remember he was a really serious AIDS activist who happened to be a singer-songwriter as well, you know, so.
Any other memories of those sessions?
Not much. I remember the little motel we stayed in in San Francisco, and I remember meeting Holly and Chris for the first time and how sweet they were, you know. But it was just, you know, it's a nice time. It was a really good time. And Michael's kind of frail. He would be pretty tired, I think, you know, and he would have to get up enough energy to come into the studio and record.
One of the songs was They Are Falling All Around Us. But that's the one that you sang with Holly Near and Chris Williamson and
yeah.
John Bacchino.
I remember crying in the studio singing it.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. The strongest leaves of my tree.
Every paper brings the news that every paper brings the news that every paper brings the news that the teachers of my life are moving on.
Are moving on.
Death comes and rests so heavy. Death comes and rests so heavy. Death comes and rests so heavy. Your face I'll never see. Never see you anymore.
I want to move ahead to 2000. You did a film soundtrack called Duets.
Yeah, the two tracks I'm on are Free Bird and Try a Little Tenderness. Try a Little Tenderness is a duet with Paul Giamatti, who I love, love, love. And he actually sang the duet with me. We were on one mic, you know, singing to each other. It was like, you know, like Sam and Dave style, you know. And that was really big fun. And then I had that solo, which is the end of the tune, the end of the movie on Freebird, just an a cappella solo, which is one of the coolest things I ever did. Because, you know, whenever you go to a concert, people yell out Freebird as a joke. And it was funny because they wanted it to be very sort of inside and personal. And I recorded it in a dark sort of booth, sort of sitting on the floor, and just, he said, just sing it the way you would sing it. Here are the words, and here is the melody, but just sort of do it the way you would do it.
Up to 2002, you had an excellent idea for an album, and it was the idea of doing it with the name Back to Front.
Yeah. The idea came from there was some press on Exception to the Rule, or one of my previous records. The title of the article is Arnold McCullough, Back to Front. And I said, well, that's a great idea for a backup singer to sing stuff that he's sung on, but make it his own and, you know, sing the lead vocals on. I took like two or three tunes from each of the artists that I'd been working, singing with and or touring with, and turned their tunes into my tunes. I kind of would have loved to have had them sing backing vocals for me, but it was just, that would have been too costly and time-consuming.
Oh, yeah. I know a couple of the tracks were A Nick of Time and I Can't Make You Love Me.
Yeah.
What classics.
Yeah, I sang on those original records. And Bonnie loved the fact, she said, I ain't never been covered before, she said. Those are her first words.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She said she had never had anyone cover her record.
That's hard to believe.
It is. It's funny.
Just when I thought I had enough and all my tears were shed, no promise left unbroken, there were no painful words unsaid. You came along and showed me how to leave it all behind. You opened up my heart again, and then much to my surprise, I found a love, yeah,
love in the big time.
Here's just a bit of another song I love from the Back to Front CD, I Can't Make You Love Me.
Ain't no use in me trying, baby.
To mind when I ask if there's a particular album that you did backups on where you're particularly proud?
The first would be Nick of Time, I'd say. Bonnie Raitt, Nick of Time. But then also the Ry Cooder stuff I did. I love working with Ry Cooder. Getting to sing on an Aretha Franklin tune. I sang Hold On, I'm Coming on an Aretha Franklin record. Just to be on an Aretha Franklin record was a big thrill for me.
You sang back up for James Taylor at the inauguration of President Obama. That's got to be a highlight of your career.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was wonderful to have been seen doing that and to be there for the biggest political moment of my life, you know. But on top of it, it was, you know, you know, all the people that were on the mall, as well as all the people that saw it on television. But on top of that, CNN actually covered President Obama walking down the row of artists and shaking each of their hands. And when CNN turned that moment on, the first person that you saw shaking his hand was me. So people actually saw me on CNN shaking the president's hand.
Wow.
So it was just one of those really perfect timing things.
How did you start working with James Taylor?
I had done a lot of studio work in New York, and this guitar player named David Spinoza loved David and I, loved our sound, and he heard us on a lot of different records, and Spinoza was on, you know, a lot of hits and stuff. And so it's either David, I believe David Spinoza referred us to James, because James said, you know, I'm about to go out on the road, and I've got all these harmonies, and I don't want to have the band sing. I want them to really be sung well by singers. And Spinoza referred us, but I think James also saw us on Saturday Night Live singing back up with Jennifer Warnes. We did Right Time of the Night on Saturday Night Live, backing her up. So the combination of those two things, James called David Leslie and said, could you come by and talk to me about, you know, possibly singing. So we went over his house, and he and Carly were still together at the time. And I remember it was 135 Central Park West, and there was a big, huge painting of a gorilla in a beach chair on the wall. It was my favorite image of that moment. And we sat and sang and drank water and talked and sang and drank water. We just sang and talked for 6 solid hours. And that's sort of how we got started.
Your solo parts on Shower the People appear to be fan favorites.
Yeah. It's, you know, he can't do a tour without that being an encore or being an integral part of his set. And it's hard for me to walk away from touring with him, but it's also imperative that at some point I do it to branch out and do more solo work and more club work here in LA and more solo records. You see, I have just so much more to do than sing backup for James.
Right.
Shower the people you love with love. Show them the way that you feel. Shower the people you love with love. Show them the way that you feel.
They say it.
Shower the people you love with love.
Oh, sometimes the
show
rain
them the way will that you
fall.
Feel.
Oh, but like the
shower.
Gentlemen, Arnold McCullough, Mr. Arnold.
That was from a 1998 concert in New York City at the Beacon Theater.
Well, I know you had several other album projects in the 2000s. I want to get to the new one, though.
Oh, great.
And you co-wrote the title track. Let's hear about that one.
It's called Soon As I Get Paid. It's funny, the album name, I was just making up names. James and I and a bunch of friends of mine were making up what would be a great blues album name, you know. And I had all these titles that were funny, you know. And I remembered, meeting Chuck Berry on the American Hot Wax movie and hearing stories about how he would have to get paid before he went on stage. And I heard those stories about Mahalia Jackson and Aretha Franklin and all these cool blues artists who had been screwed in their past. And then they just decided the only way they're going to work is to get their money up front. So we thought "Soon as I Get Paid" is a great title. Laughing, but then I had all 9 tunes and I said I would love to write a tune from the title, and it ended up being this autobiographical thing about my dad and being raised in Cleveland and just how he made his living in the summers paving asphalt. The McCullough Paving Company was what it was.
When I was a boy, Daddy made good for me. Gave him a broken back and run over feet. He was out by 5, then back again by 10. Pouring asphalt in the summer heat. Ooh, Lord. My mama did the books for the business. Kept the pantry full for wintertime. Baking and cooking them old recipes. We always had enough to get by. Daddy talked about how hard it was just to make a smooth grain. I'm gonna get me some tires for my old Chevy truck just as soon as I get paid.
Well, the album has a nice mix of new and old, and the old ones include There Is Something on My Mind, which I love, and Lonely Teardrops and Do Right Woman. So how did you pick the material?
I just found over time, bluesy type songs that I felt suited my voice. It would make me sound authentic, not trying to be a blues man, not trying to be Bobby Blue Bland or some of the other guys that are blues players, but just trying to find the obscure songs that really fit me, And like "Do Right Woman" isn't necessarily a blues tune, but it came off great as a blues tune. It's also a song sung by a woman, but it translated great from a man's point of view.
Take me to heart, and I'll always love you. And nobody can make me do wrong. Take me for granted, leaving love unsure makes willpower weak and temptation strong. Woman's only human. This you should understand. She's not just a plaything. She's flesh and blood, just like a man. So if you wanna do right, home days, woman, you gotta be a do-right home night's maid.
I recorded my interview with Arnold McCullough on October 17th, and 2 days earlier, he had performed at a special concert called Decade of Difference, honoring the birthday of President Clinton and the 10th anniversary of his foundation.
Yes. It was... the Bill Clinton Foundation, Bill Clinton's birthday bash, and for the first time, I've known of Stevie, I've met him a few times, but my first time singing backup for Stevie Wonder, who opened the show, on the show was, on the bill was Lady Gaga, and who I've met as well. I met her in Australia, but I didn't get to say hi to her this last trip. There were so many people backstage, and it was just, at some point you just had to go to your trailer and take a breather from all the stars. it was like a little overwhelming sometimes, you know, with the president and Hillary and Chelsea and Bonnie was there, Bonnie Raitt, and Joni Mitchell was there, and Jane Fonda and Richard Perry and Ashton Kutcher was there, Patricia Arquette, Kenny Chesney was on the bill, Bono and Edge, Usher, and then Stevie, you know.
You sang on the closing song, too.
I did. How did you know?
Because it's the whole video is online now.
Oh, really?
It's like 3.5 hours.
Oh, cool.
And I didn't watch the whole thing, but I skipped through it and found you at the end also on the song Feeling All Right.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. And my PR guy was telling me that he heard the whole thing, but I didn't know if that made it to the show.
That's kind of like the Let the Audience Walk Out Here in Music song.
Yeah, exactly. And after the show, Bill actually, Chelsea said, did you get to meet my dad? And I said, no. It's okay, no big deal. And she said, no, dad, this is one of the musicians who's singing. He was singing the last tune. And he said, yo, I love that Joe Cocker tune. And he started talking about hearing the one that someone else, that Usher sang. He said he did a great version of that, didn't he? And it was like chatting with Bill Clinton. I was like, I didn't, my words stopped coming, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just couldn't formulate my words. And I had my CD in my pocket. I'd been planning on getting an autograph from him, and I just couldn't do anything. I couldn't believe it. The cameras were going like crazy, and like he was talking to Obama or something. It was just the coolest thing. And he shook my boyfriend's hand. We were both there together.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Is there any question I should have asked you?
I've been in a relationship for 14 years with two kiddies here in the Hollywood Hills. I don't know if that's a question, but it's a little information for you. Good information.
Good information indeed. I don't usually ask that type of question, but I'm glad he volunteered it. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Music Heritage, and I want to thank Arnold McCullough for the wonderful interview, and to thank you for listening. And to remind you that this is just part one of the show this month. Also on my website, you can find an exclusive interview with Gwen Avery, one of the pioneer blues singers of the women's music movement. And again, my site is at queermusicheritage.com. Of course, I saved one more question for Arnold to close out the show.
Hard question. Is there a song on the album that's a special favorite of yours?
My absolute favorite is Gods and Monsters. I wrote it, and it's the song that sort of is, I think, the best writing I think I've done in a long time.
You talk about the song?
I went to see my friend Mike Landau, who's playing guitar on the record, at the Baked Potato here in L.A., and came home. We were having fires in L.A., and, you know, at sunset, when there are fires, it's just an unbelievable sky. The sky is like colors and black and red, and just it's just the eeriest sky you could ever see. And the fires were in Catalina Island, and as the sun was setting, I remember going to the gig and seeing the fires, but I stayed for the late show. This was sort of, Gods and Monsters is sort of my version of Killing Me Softly, and it's that feeling that I got when I went to see Mike play, and the feeling that I was feeling in Los Angeles at the time with the fires and all that stuff. I just put it into a tune at 2 a.m. and just put it on tape and you know, decided to, map it out and make it a real song.
Mm-hmm.
wear white out tonight. Blinded by your weeping guitar, red is what my eyes feel like. Robin's egg, rock me hard, lullaby, late and past the midnight hour. Foggy Catalina, smoke-filled sky, Snakey is bringing the power. Snake is calling gods and monsters. Snake is playing voodoo for the drag queens. That's entertainment, boy, closing down the late, late show. Closing down the late, late show. Warm wind blowing through the mountains, always want to pick up at night. Hot fire rising in the morning sun, a cataclysmic jungle delight. I'm green all flush with the envy. How does it come so sweet? Smooth soul in those lingering chords, they seem to come so naturally. Snake is calling gods and monsters. Snake is playing voodoo for the drag queens. That's entertainment, boy. You're closing down the late, late show. Closing down the late, late show. Closing down the late, late show. Snake is calling gods and monsters. Snake is playing voodoo for the drag kings. That is entertainment, boy. Closing down the late, late show. Closing down the late, late show. Closing down the late, late show. Snakey.